Hello, it's time for the Security Weekly News, episode number 97. Welcome to the news for the week of 31 January 2021. TikTok naughtiness, Sonic Wall, the NSA, Big Knox, slip streaming, and ESET research. All this and Jason Wood on the Security Weekly News.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week, your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News.
As technology continues to evolve and expand, so have the attackers that put our critical systems in jeopardy. Core Impact from Core Security is a penetration testing tool that safely finds vulnerabilities using the same techniques of adversaries, with certified exploits and wizards that guide you through critical pen tests while maximizing the time of advanced testers by automating their routines. With Core Security, you can safeguard your infrastructure by limiting access, detecting threats, testing for security weaknesses, and efficiently monitoring data. Visit securityweekly.com/core security.
Welcome back. On a sad note and dedication, my longtime friend, and I mean long time, like long, long time, Lou G. Well, he went down the long blue tunnel to the afterlife, and he was literally the smartest person I ever knew. He's a great guitarist, and I will miss him. So everybody who so imbibes, please have a Tanqueray and tonic for him if you like. Cheers, Lou. Stardust. See ya. But now I'll do the news. No more sad stuff. Congress is now involved in the SolarWinds problem. Always a good sign when it starts off with Congress is involved. So the Congress of the United States sent a letter to the National Security Agency. That's the NSA to all of you simple folks. The letter suggested that the NSA isn't properly conducting oversight of software supply chains, which would affect the U.S. government. So I guess this started with the Juniper breach. This is what they keep referencing, the Juniper breach back in 2015, which resulted from an NSA-designed algorithm which allowed, wait for it, a backdoor to be inserted into Juniper devices. It also apparently was pretty weak security. But this revolves around the assignation that dual_EC_DRBG, which is an NSA crypto algorithm, is not very good. Not to mention being a backdoor. So, like, A, don't put backdoors and stuff. This has been one of those recurring things with the U.S. government and other governments where they always want any kind of crypto, you know, to have a secret that they can get into so that they can monitor transactions. And I do see their argument. I mean, if you're trying to surveil people and everything's encrypted and you have no way to get to it, no matter how many quarters you get, well, then, it's going to be tough to surveil. But I think that's just what they're up against now. When you stick backdoors and stuff, it's just a matter of time till somebody, you know, compromises it. In 2016, Juniper removed the algorithm, so they actually took it out. But the Congress then turned around and asked for a lessons learned report from the NSA on the Juniper incident and wanted to know what the NSA did to keep this from happening. Of course, that's cashed in the like sort of, what did you do to keep this from happening again? SolarWinds. Yeah. So they gave them until the 26th of February to respond. So hopefully there'll be more about this. We'll see what they say later this month. Not quite as dramatic as the Juniper breach or the SolarWinds hack. Big Knox, a Chinese-owned company that produces Knox Player, has been accused of having a supply chain-style backdoor in the player, which allows you to run the player itself allows you to run Android apps on the PC or a Mac. So if you're just that into your Android apps and you want to play them on a big screen or on your PC, I guess that's how you do that. Big Knox denied that there was any kind of thing, that there was no relation between them and an attack that occurred in January. But Threat Post said that their research showed three different malware families being deployed to a highly targeted set of customers that were using this app. The problem basically is in the update process. The article I posted has all the details of how it works. And so it may be that Big Knox just doesn't want to admit to it. It may be, I don't know, maybe somebody else is involved, like, I don't know, say Satan. I don't know. But ESET was the ones that reported this research, and we'll hear more from them later. So they had a big week. Last week, we reported on the NAT Slipstreaming 2.0 attack, and Apple has now released a patch which will resolve this problem on their browsers. If you don't recall, a slipstreaming attack is basically a mechanism that gets you around, and it's one of my pet peeves, security through obscurity, or PAT. And another one of my pet peeves is calling PAT NAT, which they do all the time, even though it's not completely wrong to say that. But the attack basically, a slipstreaming attack basically focuses on PAT, port address translation mechanisms, which typically consolidate a large number of private machines into a single outside IP. So if you've worked with PAT, you know this works. But basically what they do is they take the source port of the inside private address and they use that in a table to map the outside single IP to a whole pile of internal addresses. PAT was one of the primary ways that we got around the IPv4 limitations back even in the early 2000s. It does have an effect of obscuring these devices. Like, you can't really get to those IP addresses unless you know the source port and it's already in the table, right? So this is why they say, oh, you know, we have security through PAT. I'm like, no, you don't. You're just kidding yourself. But basically, so somebody can't see it, they can't remote to it. They would have to have inside information. But the slipstreaming attack, the original one, allows for the exploitation of a browser, which effectively uses table to create a connection and send traffic to the local machine, despite the fact that PAT is there, because the traffic is coming to the browser and they've established the connection already with somebody clicking on a bad URL. Sorry, I say URL sometimes, and then everybody looks at me weird, but I've been saying that since before a lot of you were born, so you just have to live with it. The older attack just allowed it to happen on the single padded machine, but the new 2.0 version was allowing access to other machines inside the organization after the first one was compromised. The article has a pretty detailed explanation, but then I attached two more articles on the wiki, one that has a whole bunch of really detailed explanations of slipstreaming with graphics and so forth if you need something to refer to when you're trying to explain this to people. And then I also did attach the original NAT pinning attack, which was from all the way back in 2010, which basically did this same thing. It created a hidden connect form, and then you click on a poisoned URL, and that allowed the creation of a session, which allowed you to connect back to PAT machine with the demo and proof of concept and all that stuff. And I know PAT is part of NAT, but I just like to call it PAT because it is PAT, and NAT contains SNAT and DNAT and all those other kind of things. But that's just me, so don't worry about it. SonicWall SMA100 has a zero-day vulnerability. We did report this last week, but last week they were saying it might have. So SonicWall kind of came out and said it appears that there might possibly be. Now they're basically saying there's evidence being reported that it's being used in the wild. SonicWall is basically disclosing that it is there. So SonicWall did disclose the original attack on the 22nd of January and said it was a probable zero day, but NCC Group tweeted now that they do have evidence that the exploit is being used actively against SMA100 devices. They did not provide the details of the exploit in the article because they said they're waiting until that they have a chance to resolve this, but they suggested that you monitor your access logs for unusual IP addresses trying to reach the management interface. So they gave you a set of steps there you could do. SonicWall did confirm this after that tweet came out, and they said there is vulnerable code, and they hope that they will have a patch by end of business today. The vulnerability is found in physical and virtual SMA100, 10.x, SMA200, SMA210, SMA400, SMA410, and SMA500V devices. The article does have at the end a list of recommendations about best practice until you can get the patch installed. Another ESET find this week, a backdoored version of OpenSSH has apparently been being used to steal credentials for secure network connections on supercomputers. So according to article, this is a fairly limited attack, as you might guess, because, you know, there's just not that many supercomputers really. But it is another example, to me anyway, of a possible supply chain attack on, you know, government, academic, research type entities, since they are the people who tend to have these large, expensive computers. And so, you know, this may be more evidence that some of this supply chain stuff is escalating, or that it's being driven by nation states, or who knows. But security researchers at ESET found that the malware, and they named it Kobalos. And Kobalos is a Greek mischief maker, and like Greek mythos, like Loki is like what Kobalos is like. You basically learn over time that all the myths in the whole world are all just stolen from other old myths, and like probably somewhere back in like Mesopotamia, there was like this guy called, you know, Harold the Myth Maker, and he like invented all this stuff. He's like the Stephen King of his day. But anyway, Caballus malware does run on FreeBSD, Solaris, and I'm guessing it probably runs on other variants of BSD that were derived from that. The malware provides remote access, terminal sessions, but it primarily seems to be focused on stealing credentials, was what they said. So ESET asked that anyone that finds evidence of this should notify them, and there is a link to the full technical analysis by ESET in the article. I don't usually report much on ransomware, you know, because it's kind of like that could just be like Security Weekly ransomware, and we could just do like a 30-minute show every week on all the ransomware attacks that have happened since yesterday. But according to this report from Digital Shadows in ZDNet, the industry most targeted, and so this is why this caught my attention, the industry's most targeted by ransomware in a study from 2020 said that it was industrial goods and services, about 29% of all the attacks. So that's a third. So, or almost a third. So, and you know, you think about that kind of industrial industry, ICS systems, those industries are filled with complex, older, often immature security infrastructures, you know, all that kind of stuff. If you've ever worked at a factory of any sort, you've probably seen that and felt that sort of fear when they said, yes, everything here runs on Windows NT 4.0. And you're going, what? And we can't patch it. It's embedded. Okay. And it has default passwords built into the firmware. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, obviously, that industrial control industry is a bit of a challenge. At the same time, all those same industries are adding all sorts of IIoT devices to their factories, which makes them really fat, juicy targets for ransomware, which is apparently trying to compete with the porn industry as one of the world's largest, like, underground marketplaces in the world. I did just want to mention this and tell you that Microsoft did issue yet another notice that Skype for Business will depart this world on 31st of July in 2021. This was originally announced back in 2019, and there was a lot of people saying, well, given COVID and all this kind of stuff, because originally when they announced it, everybody was like, okay, so what? But then COVID came along, everybody switched over to using Skype all the time for all this stuff. But Microsoft said they will not extend this again. They were trying to allow plenty of time starting in 2019, but COVID definitely complicated the whole matter. But despite this, they said they were not going to extend the deadline for Skype going away. So you will need to migrate to Teams if you're going to continue using Microsoft platforms for this kind of stuff. Not that there's not 50 other platforms out there. So, you know, sometime before that time, you may want to allow for testing, you know, like security stuff. When we return, Jason Wood joins us. Stick around.
Do you know where your organization's crown jewel data is, whose data it is, what it contains, and if it's flagged, tagged, and classified accurately? Defense In-Depth requires discovery in-depth. At Big ID, they help organizations uncover dark data, classify sensitive and regulated data, meet compliance requirements, and take action for data on-prem, in the cloud, and everywhere in between. Learn more about how Discovery In-Depth can change the way enterprise organizations find, classify, and protect sensitive data at securityweekly.com/BigID.
When Gotham police responded to a man dressed all in white spandex standing in the rain and brooding, they simply asked him if maybe, just maybe, when it rains, he could maybe wear something not so, you know, like transparent when it gets wet. I mean, well, the guy who made that call and put the dangler behind bars save the day was none other than Jason Wood. Hi.
I'm so glad that I was not the one wearing the spandex.
You weren't the dangler, no.
Listen to this. I'm like,
I let you be the hero for once.
Oh, my.
The world needs more heroes.
I appreciate that.
But I was letting it build up, so.
Oh, dear. You were.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. So, welcome to the commentary section of Security Weekly News. Yeah, one of the interesting things to me is to watch how organizations, at least those that we can see in the public, respond to different intrusions. And yesterday, the Register published an article about how the SolarWinds supply side attack has had a significant impact on the United States court system. And you can hear the author's shock as they wrote out this headline saying, U.S. court system ditches electronic filing, goes paper only for sensitive documents following SolarWinds hack. Lawyers required to hand in dead tree copies. No, seriously. And So I chuckled at it. Like I said, I enjoy their headlines. But, you know, I suppose the reaction makes sense when you look at the years of effort put into moving to an electronic format, particularly I can imagine a court system being resistant to departing with their paper documents, finally get into an electronic system, and then we step back and now, at least for some data, are requiring paper filings only. At the same time, I don't share the total level of horror because, you know, paper is, of course, an acceptable fallback in situations where confidentiality is critical and you believe that the system has lost that capability. So what appears to have happened here? Why are we in this situation? Back in early January 2021, it became public that the U.S. court system had been caught up in the SolarWinds attack on their software suite. And at the time, and there's a link in the if you follow the link in the show notes, you'll see the previous article that the Register had where they talked about this. They started speculating about attackers being able to read court documents and things like that, and at the time, you know, they quoted somebody as saying, "Hey, you know, let's not get too caught up in this. We don't know for sure. You know, we don't want to jump to too many conclusions. You know, there are a number of things you have to do from having a presence on a network to being able to actually get access to every application, the data in every application that is in that environment. Even though in this case, I imagine it would be a rather juicy target and one that adversaries would be interested in." So while that is certainly going to be a top question that investigators are going to be pursuing, we don't want to get too crazy with our speculations in any early stage of an investigation. We fast forward to yesterday. The Register releases this article saying, yep, it appears that there is some impact to the confidentiality of this document system, because they cite an order given to, and the link is in the show notes, Middle District of Louisiana Court District, basically says that it requires, and I'll just go ahead and read this, that highly sensitive information be filed in paper format only. So documents, and they're limiting it to highly sensitive, meaning documents containing information that is likely to be of interest to the intelligence service of a foreign government, or whose use or disclosure by a hostile foreign government would cause significant harm to the United States or its interest. And then it gets into things like, hey, there's, you know, could have impacts for terrorism, foreign sovereign interests, cybersecurity activities, things like that. Order does go on to explicitly say, hey, things that are day-to-day filings, court pleadings, you know, just the day-to-day housekeeping of the courts, that still continues to use the old system. But if you have highly sensitive data that meets this definition, then basically the lawyers have to print all of this out and deliver it physically to the court system where it will be filed, maybe uploaded to a computer that has no network connection. So if you wanted to go back and view it for some reason, you'd have to go to the courts, though I suspect you'd have that data back at your law office. With all of that said, so what? Why do we care? I mean, we're security folks. What's the deal? I thought about the real impact that these type of intrusions have on organizations. Obviously, the U.S. court system and other organizations impacted by this attack, they have to continue to function. They can't just quit until things are fixed, whatever that means. And, you know, we see that around us. We live in a time where major adaptations are being made all the time in response to the pandemic, as well as this, you know, incidents like this. That doesn't mean these adaptations are good, workable, or any way fun to work with. We can all probably point to requirements that have been made in response to coronavirus, for example, that seem to not be very effective and are frustrating. But we need to keep in mind that these are created in a time of extreme pressure, limited information, and things like that. So it's not unusual to see them change. And so here was a takeaway. This might be something for us to look at as a tabletop exercise. Take a look at our own organizations and say, hey, we have this system that's really important to us. What would we do if we lost confidentiality of that system and build a tabletop exercise around that, where you start to talk through the, with other stakeholders, how would we do this? What would the response be? And that doesn't mean that we have to go out and start buying things and implementing things to deal with this possibility, but at least we start to flesh out what type of responses do we have available to us? What are some things that we can do? We can look at over time and maybe improve on that and make it more workable. So I think it could be a valuable tabletop exercise, both for the system that we're talking about, and honestly, you use this as an example of, hey, here's maybe, look at what happened with this attack. Use this as some justification to do your first tabletop exercise, gather up the stakeholders, go through the process. Even if you never have to deal with this particular issue of that system that you identified as being compromised and loss of confidentiality and stuff like that, just going through the process and getting people talking can probably be valuable when you run into another crisis, different crisis. And we all have those inside of our organizations. It helps everybody get more familiar with making these types of decisions and changes and what we can and can't do under pressure. So it's worth reading through. Spend some time thinking about it with your environment. What do you think? How would you, how would you deal with something like this? In the meantime, if you are a lawyer who is dealing with highly sensitive information and the U.S. court system, good luck printing and filing your documents. Sounds like it's going to be a real treat.
It's going to be the law like it was 1999, right? So we're gonna... I really like the idea of the tabletop, because I do think that in regards to court, I definitely think that there's an evidence problem here, because we spend so much energy talking about chain of custody and how to maintain that sacrosanct nature of all this stuff. And then the minute that somebody can start introducing these ideas that maybe this evidence is tainted, maybe this, because there are chain of custody documents in those files. And if you send those through and somebody goes in there and messes with them, or even if just the suggestion that they might have been messed with, if you ever watch some of these high profile criminal cases and watched how these little tiddly things end up, changing the whole outcome of the case, and ends up with bad people walking free and things like that. It's a very huge implication, but it can have a big implication for your company as well, just because you need to probably think about, what does it mean? I mean, we always do risk reduction, thinking about what happens if we have a flood, and now we need to start thinking about what happens if we have a major breach like this that breaches confidentiality. And of course, you should be looking at all the other ones as well, but this is a really good example. I completely agree. And finally... probably since about forever. I mean, so when I worked in a camera store briefly a long time ago, basically we told people you shouldn't take nude photos. I mean, that was just kind of like a thing, right? And it was illegal, and it was like we were supposed to report it. And I mean, we were supposed to like call the police if we saw nude photos coming through when they developed film. And I didn't do that part, but they had all these rules. So printing out your still photos in 8x10 at Walgreens, that's still probably a bad idea. When there's people standing there and all your nudes are coming out, storing all your nudes on your phone, because people love to take nude photos of themselves. I mean, I hate to tell you this, but they really do like to do this. I mean, that's where Polaroids came from, right? I mean, that was like, people were buying Polaroid cameras because they couldn't get their nude photos developed. I know I'm being ridiculous, but it's not really that ridiculous. But putting it on your phone, well, then there's a whole new layer of the problem. Well, anyway, so the point of this. So TikTok, and we're all familiar with TikTok by now, but TikTok has another thing on there called the Silhouette Challenge. I saw this article. I had to look up what the Silhouette Challenge was, and it made me want to do one. And but then I did one, and I kind of looked like a walrus, so I decided maybe it wasn't a good idea. But the TikTok Silhouette Challenge, you use a red filter and you make a silhouette. And so, okay, no big deal. It sounds pretty harmless. But then, of course, it's supposed to be it was supposed to originally be like a positive thing, and everybody's different and blah blah blah. But most of the silhouettes are not, like that. There are people wearing lingerie, people naked, people standing, and on and on and on. But even then, it's a silhouette, right? So nobody can see your face. It's just a silhouette. And but guess what? Now there's YouTube videos out there that will tell you easily how to remove the red filter, which means that once you go on the TikTok video and you strip the red filter off, you can see what's underneath it. You can see the person's face. You can see the nude on there. So, you know, so just a big warning. I mean, deep fakes mean that anybody can be turned into a porn star. I mean, you know, they keep doing that to me. And I mean, I'm going to say that maybe that was not a deep fake. I'm not sure. And you can certainly check out all my nudes on IamTheWalrus.com. I'm just making that up, so don't go there because it's probably a real porn site. But anyway, that's the news and the continuing time of plague. There is no such thing as Jewish space lasers. I hate to tell you that. But anyway, I'm Doug White, and that's the news. Thanks for watching.